chapter 1. Would you stand with me? And we will read all of Ruth chapter 1 together. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judea, or Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These two took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left with her without her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they are grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it's exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts from me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, Is this Naomi? She said to them, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. You may be seated. I think to begin with, in order to understand the book of Ruth, we really have to understand the culture and the contextual framework to begin to even get our mind around this. Now, the book of Ruth particularly, it would be easiest to preach it all in one sitting, but that would mean that you would be here for 4 hours. So we're going to do this over 4 weeks, but it is a build from one act to the next because the genre is historical narrative, which means today I'm telling you only a portion of the story from the book of Ruth. Now, let me give you the context as we talk about the topic, when life becomes bitter, God is working. This chapter starts in Bethlehem and ends in Bethlehem. Now, the word Bethlehem, the town that you've heard of, it means house of bread. House of bread. And the irony that we catch from the very beginning of Ruth chapter 1 is that in Bethlehem, in the house of bread, there is a famine, which means that if there's a famine in Bethlehem, guess what they don't have in the house of bread? Bread. And this is the beginning irony. There is no bread in the house of bread. And that presents a problem for the people that live there. There is a famine in all of the land, but we catch the Bethlehem perspective here. Now we know from the Torah or the Hebrew Bible, our Old Testament, that famine in the Eastern context is judgment from God. And this is what's happening. In fact, in Leviticus chapter 26, 18 to 20, and also mentioned again in Deuteronomy, we see famine and the lack of fruit as judgment from God. Here's what it says. And if in spite of this you will not listen to me, then I will discipline you again sevenfold for your sins. And I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heavens like iron and your earth like bronze, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield its increase, and the trees of the land shall not yield fruit. So what God told the people of Israel when they went into the land through the prophet Moses was this: if you obey me, I will bless you. You will have houses that you didn't build, vineyards that you didn't plant. This will be the land flowing with milk and honey. You will have fruit like you've never imagined. This will be the most fertile place. But if you don't obey me, if you worship idols, if you practice sexual immorality, then you will have famine, and the most fertile land in the world will not be fertile. And this is what's happening as we pick up in Ruth chapter 1. This is the judgment of God. The house of bread, Bethlehem or Bethlehem, has no grain. Now, there's a man introduced to us very early on in chapter 1 named Elimelech. Anybody give their child a middle name like Elimelech or anything like that? Elimelech means my God is king. Now, names always mean something in the Hebrew Bible. This means Elimelech, my God is king. Now, here's what my God is king Elimelech does. In the midst of a famine and judgment, instead of tearing his clothes and repenting in Bethlehem, crying out to God and saying, help us, he does something very different. He makes his own plan. And what we learn is that Elimelech loads up the family and moves them to Moab. Now, Moab is really important for us to understand. This is not Moab, Texas or Moab, Tennessee. This is Moab, which is currently modern Jordan. Moab is a people as much as it is a land. And here's what we know from the text about Moab. The first thing we learned about the Moabites is that they lured the people of Israel into sexual immorality and idol worship. You can find that in Numbers chapter 25, 1 to 9, if you want to read that later. So the first interaction with Israel and Moab, they lure the people away from God and toward idol worship. Secondly, the origin of Moab, found in Genesis chapter 19, verse 30 to 38, is an awful story. It's an awful story of Lot leaving Sodom and Gomorrah. They're told, don't look back. His wife turns back. She turns to a pillar of salt, and Lot continues on with his daughters without his wife. When they come into the land with Abraham, after escaping the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, these daughters of Lot get their father drunk so that they could become pregnant by him and have, since their husbands were dead, so their line could continue. One gave birth to a son named, guess what? Moab. And Moab became the father of the Moabite people. Now, for Elimelech, in the book of Judges, Elimelech, this guy that's making this decision to move to Moab, the most recent news, if he had a Twitter feed, was that King Eglon, the Moabite king, had been oppressing the people of Israel. And so Elimelech is deciding, I'm going to leave the house of bread where there is no bread. I'm not going to cry out to God. I'm going to make a plan to really save my family, and I'm going to go to Moab, the oppressors, the one whose origin is horrific incest, and the one who has led us to idolatry and sexual immorality before. Who smells trouble? Anyone? And trouble is coming. So Elimelech does this thing, and he moves. Now, he takes with him his wife, Naomi. And her name means pleasant. Now, it's important for us to know that this book, Ruth, is named after a woman who is a Moabitess. Okay, she is from Moab, of the people of Moab. Now, in the East, no matter how many hundreds of years you're talking about, if you're from a particular household, you are characterized by that household. So if your household is immoral, guess what? You're immoral. At least everybody thinks you are. If your household is birthed in an incestuous origin, guess what? You're birthed in an incestuous origin, at least in the minds of everybody. If your household is oppressive, guess what? You are oppressive in the minds of everybody in the Eastern mindset. So Ruth, among the people of Israel, doesn't really have a chance when it comes to reputation because she is a Moabite, and that's who this book is named after. Now, I want to make some observations that I think apply to our lives even now from Ruth chapter 1. Here's the first one. Sometimes our best plans turn out very differently than we had hoped. Sometimes our best plans just turn out very differently than we had hoped. How many of you have already lived that in your life? Like, the best laid plans just did not turn out the way that I thought that they would. And this is what happens here with Elimelech and Naomi. They go looking for food, but soon after, the scripture tells us, Elimelech dies. Soon after that, Naomi and Elimelech's two sons take Moabite wives, Orpah and Ruth. And by the way, if you're from Judah and you follow the Torah, can you intermarry with Moabite wives? No. It doesn't have anything to do with skin color. It has everything to do with idolatry. Okay? It's not where they're from. It's who they worship. And you're not supposed to intermarry. And so, not supposed to happen yet. Right here, we have these two sons of Judah marrying Moabite wives. One is named Orpah. The other is named Ruth. Naomi's husband dies. Then her two boys die, and Naomi is only left with Orpah and Ruth. So then Orpah is, with Naomi's blessing, is sent back to live with her household. Go back to your family of origin. Now, there's this interesting dialogue here that's like, are you going to wait for me to have a husband, get pregnant, and then, bear sons, and then you can marry those sons? That might sound weird to an American, right? 21st century, we're not doing that. But in this time frame in the East, what would happen is, if your husband died, you would marry the brother, and he would be your redeemer. He would be the one that brought you back into the family, made sure everything was taken care of, you were good. So Naomi is just saying, look, are you going to wait for me to even find a husband? Secondly, to get pregnant. Third, to have sons. And then are you going to wait for them to grow up and then marry them when they're old enough to be married? I don't think so. Go to your family of origin, right? Orpah leaves, goes back to her family of origin. Ruth, however, does not. Ruth, we get this famous passage. Ruth said, in verse 16 and 17, don't urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts me from you. So here's the choice that Ruth is making right now. Ruth is from Moab. All of her family is there. But listen, Moab worships different gods. The chief god is a little g god named Chemosh. Okay? So she, as a Moabitess, is choosing to leave her family, her culture, and her gods to go with Naomi, not knowing what her future will be, but in that, she is choosing Naomi's family, Naomi's God, which the Israelites worship, the one true God, and she is choosing to go with Naomi, and her language is very covenant-esque. You look, she says here, may the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts me from you. So Ruth is saying to Naomi, I am making you a covenant life and death promise. Where you go, I'll go. Where you stay, I'll stay. Your God's my God. Your people are mine, right? This is not what Naomi thought would happen when she and Elimelech left Bethlehem. They thought they would go live out the famine, store up some food, eat enough food, go back to Bethlehem when the famine was over. This is not what happened. Husband dies, two sons dies, one daughter-in-law goes back home. She's left with another daughter-in-law, Ruth, who she's going to have to teach everything to about Judah and the culture and their God and all of those things. However, Ruth is so persistent that the text literally says it left Naomi speechless. And so sometimes our best plans turn out very differently than what we had hoped. And that's exactly what happens for Naomi. Now, here's the second observation. Sometimes our life experiences leave us bitter toward God. It's just true. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand on this one, but you would know that you can be so wounded, so hurt by circumstances, other people. Just you thought you were doing the right thing, but it turned out to be absolutely the wrong thing. It affected you in a very difficult way. And usually in those moments, we forget it was Elimelech that said, we're moving to Moab, when God was saying, I gave you Bethlehem. We forget that we made these steps to get to a particular place. But when we get here, And we find grief and trauma and hurt and we feel abandoned, we usually blame God somewhere deep down inside. And sometimes we become very bitter. And this is what happens to Naomi. And it would happen to us. I mean, if your husband dies, if you're in a land you don't know, if both your sons die and you're left with one daughter-in-law only, and everything has changed, is that enough to make you bitter? Yes, a human will become bitter in those circumstances. Now, we find that toward the end of this chapter, we're coming back to Bethlehem. If you look at verse 19, it says, so the two of them, meaning Naomi and Ruth, went on until they came to Bethlehem. So they have left Moab, trudged the desert, the Judah wilderness, and they're back to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? She said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. So they're back to Bethlehem. The women of the town are excited to see Naomi. And Naomi, her name means pleasant or pleasant one. She says, look, to her friends, her family, the women of the town, don't call me Naomi, or in English, don't call me pleasant. Call me Mara. Mara means bitter. Don't call me pleasant, call me bitter, because the Almighty has dealt with me there in a very bitter way, right? That's her perspective. The Lord has crushed her. He took my husband, he took my sons, I'm left now with this Moabitess Ruth, I'm coming back into town, and you say, is this Naomi? And I'm saying, no, it's not, it's bitter. We should change my name to bitter, because that is where I am. Don't call me pleasant, because I went away full, and I come back empty. Again, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but has anyone ever felt like that? I went away full, and I came back empty. For whatever the circumstances, whatever the problems, whatever the wounding, whatever the sin, whatever, I went away full, but I came back empty, and it left Naomi bitter, and it certainly can do the same with us. Bitterness is an issue common to humanity. Now, that's the end of what I would call Act 1. When you're reading it in the original language. And if I left you right here, right now, we would just walk away on Mother's Day going, and Naomi was bitter. It'd make for a fun lunch. But I don't want to do that. I actually want you to take a look at this from the God perspective, and then let's learn some things about ourselves and about God. Verse 22, it's a summary piece. It's actually the beginning of Act 2, what I would call Act 2. But it's important for us, I think, today to understand. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Now, do you remember when they left Bethlehem, there was no bread in the house of bread? Now you get to this beginning of Act 2, and we get a picture of a new day. Judgment is gone. God is on the move. Fertility is back because we've come to the house of bread in the time of what? The barley harvest. In other words, there is fruit now coming from the ground. The famine is over. The judgment is over. For the reader, we're hearing the house of bread has bread again. This is a new day. If you're an original reader, this begins to make your heart beat. Where you were once sad because the house of bread has no bread, now the house of bread is filling its silos again, okay? This is what we begin to understand. Now, this picture of a new day is a picture of God's provision, his provision, and I'm going to use an idiom that the book of Ruth actually uses later, called being under his wings. Under his wings. Now, what does that mean? Well, when we are under his wings, we are under the umbrella of his protection, under the umbrella of his provision. And even though life circumstances may not seem right, the house of bread has no bread, or we might make a decision, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go to Moab and I think it'll all be better over here and it doesn't turn out the way that we want. In either case, because of the sovereignty of God and his goodness and the character and nature, his kids are under his wings. And this is true also for Naomi and for Ruth. I want to read to you Matthew chapter 1. Verses 2-6, because see, God had a greater perspective than Naomi. And let me just make this observation. God always has a greater perspective than me. God's perspective is always greater than my perspective. I can only see things from wherever my 2 feet are, from whatever my experiences are in the course of my life, from whatever the depth of my understanding of the text is. That's all I can see things as. But God knows all of it. He's the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. There's nothing happening that he doesn't know about, that he hasn't already seen. He's not captive to time. And that will blow your mind when you start thinking about it. But he's not captive to time. And so what's happening for Naomi and Ruth right here in this moment is actually a grander, bigger picture already ordained by God. Listen to Matthew 1, 2-6. It won't sound super exciting right away, but hang with me. Abraham was the father of Isaac. And Isaac, the father of Jacob, and Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. And Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez, the father of Hezron, and Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab, the father of Nahshon, and Nahshon, the father of Salmon, and Salmon, the father of Boaz by Rahab, and Boaz, the father of Obed by Ruth. And Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of David, the king. Now see, here's what God sees in the life of a bitter woman that she cannot see in that moment. Ruth, who marries Boaz, and you will later see in this book, and fathers Obed, actually becomes the great-grandmother of King David. And the scripture tells us of the Messiah's lineage that he would raise up one whose throne would never end from the line of guess who? David. And this Messiah that would be born from the line of David, he would be born in a place called Bethlehem, where once there was a place called the House of Bread who had no bread, and now the House of Bread has a little baby in it, and he would be given the name the Bread of Life. You see, God has a much bigger plan in place, and he can use a family from Judah moving to Moab, and he can use a Moabite woman who everybody else would have discounted and bring her back to Bethlehem, and he does this to display his glory in the line of the Messiah who hung on a cross to save you and me and everybody who would confess with their mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in their heart that God raised him from the dead, who hung on a cross, never bitter, that you and I might know God, be forgiven of our sins, given a new identity. You see, Ruth, when she said, "Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay," she never knew in that moment what she was getting into. So a bitter woman's Moabite daughter-in-law becomes the great-grandmother of King David, furthering the hereditary line of Jesus. Now, what can we learn? What do we learn of ourselves here? And then what do we learn of God? About ourselves, let's think about these things. First, we can become bitter at God like Naomi. In fact, I would say that probably in a room this size, there have to be people here today that are bitter at God. I myself have been bitter at God, shaken my fist at God, asked, "Why, God?" But our perspectives are limited. But maybe you feel like you're bitter at God like Naomi. Can I just encourage you that God's perspective on your bitterness is so much greater than you can even think right now? Maybe you feel like a Moabite, like you're not from the right place. You have a sort of an immoral heritage. You feel like that Moabitess and that you would never be good enough for Jesus. Like somehow there's no way he could receive a person like you because of all the bad things you've done or because of whatever, you fill in the blank. And yet at the same time, you have to understand that there is this Moabitess who comes from an oppressive line, a sexually immoral line, an idolatrous line. There is this Moabitess who is the great-grandmother of King David and is in the lineage of Jesus himself. You see, Jesus would never say to you, "You're not good enough because of your sin or where you came from or your household or whatever," because in his own household, there are those who are not good enough. You see? Or maybe you're like this. Maybe you've taken a step of faith like Ruth and you don't know how it's going to turn out. Or maybe you need to take a step of faith like Ruth, not knowing how it's going to turn out. I mean, think about what she did. Leaves everything, says, "I'm going with Naomi to the one true God, to the place that is Bethlehem, and I'm not going to leave her side no matter what happens." That means if I never have a husband, if I never have kids, if I never live my hopes and dreams, I'm going to be with her because I feel like that's what God is leading me to. Maybe you're like her. Maybe you're taking a step of faith and you have no idea what is out in front of you. No idea what the Lord has at all, but you know he's leading you to do it. Can I encourage you to take that step of faith? Because God, in his infinite wisdom, because he thinks in higher ways than we could ever think, is always using every step of faith for his glory, for the expansion of his kingdom, even as he did with Ruth. Maybe we're like those three things, bitter or Moabite-like, or maybe we've just taken a step of faith and we're not sure how that's going to turn out. Well, what do we learn of God in this? Here's the first thing, and it ministers to me, is that Naomi, she said, God gave Naomi a name. It was pleasant. Naomi said, change my name to bitter, because the Almighty has dealt with me in bitter ways. But when you look at the perspective of it, even as she's shaking her fist at God and saying, God has not been good to me, and it's for good reason, death of a husband, death of two sons, all of that. She left full, she came back empty, good reason to be bitter. In all of her bitterness and all of her shaking at fist of God, God returns that bitterness with blessing. And that is what amazes me about God, is that this relationship that she has with Ruth turns out to be one of the greatest blessings of all of her life. Often, when we're bold enough to shake our fist at God, he will humble our hearts by his Spirit, and he will return our bitterness with blessing. He's a good, holy, righteous, loving, compassionate God. Here's the second thing we learn about God. God never leaves us alone. He never leaves us alone. In this story, we see like Naomi's in Moab. She feels completely abandoned. She's telling all that she has left, her daughter-in-laws, to go home. Orpah goes home. Ruth stays and covenants with her. God does not leave Naomi alone in the wilderness. He gives her Ruth, whose name means friend. And she will go with Naomi wherever she goes. And you will see, as we continue in our study of the book of Ruth, she will bless not only Naomi's present, but her legacy, her future. God never leaves us alone. Sometimes we think the Lord will abandon us, or we feel abandoned by the Lord. I would just encourage you to look up, because God never, ever leaves us alone. Here's what he said: I will not leave you or forsake you. My name is Emmanuel, God with us. You see, he doesn't leave us alone. Here's the third thing that we can learn about God from this. God can take bitterness and immorality and somehow clean that all up in his perfect sovereignty and his holiness. In this case, to further the line of David, to bring about the Messiah who would be born in Bethlehem, to fulfill all the prophecy, so that you and I, some thousands of years later, would sit here and worship that baby born in Bethlehem, that little bread of life that was born in the house of bread. He doesn't leave Bethlehem in judgment, but he blesses Bethlehem with the birth of Jesus. He doesn't leave Naomi bitter, but he blesses her with Ruth and the lineage that is Jesus. God can take our bitterness and our immorality, and when we turn to him, he can turn it all around. And what I want to say to you is, from Ruth chapter 1, here's what I hear. When I've made a terrible decision and I find myself in the wilderness of Moab and I've lost everything and it's time to go back, God's not going to forsake me. He's able to handle my bitterness. He's not going to leave me alone. And when I will finally turn to him, he will pour out his blessing on me. You see, he is not finished with you. If you're bitter this moment, he sees beyond your bitterness. If you feel alone in this moment, he has not abandoned you. He is screaming that at you in this moment. And if you think you're too bitter or too immoral, just look what he did with the line of Jesus. He is not finished with you.